Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good morning. It's my very great pleasure to get our discussions underway this morning. Those of us that have worked in law enforcement for any time know that we're constantly changing and reforming. We're required to adapt continually to keep pace with, and where we can, get in front of the threat to the public. Even so, we find ourselves now in a period of unprecedented change and ambition across the whole of law enforcement. I personally have never been aware of the amount of change impacting on so many parts of law enforcement at the same time. Nearly every law enforcement event that I've attended or spoken at during recent months has been about change. I've noted too that many of these discussions about change and reform also highlight the issues of partnership and cooperation, and it does seem that increasingly in the modern law enforcement and public protection world, the two do go closely together. This is no surprise. First, because quite simply, I believe none of us will succeed in achieving our ambitions for change unless we also use our resources collaboratively and increase the breadth and impact of our collective footprint against those that would harm the public. We cannot afford to waste our energy treading over the same patch of ground. And second, because change around how we actually work together is long overdue. We all talk a good game on partnership. We clearly recognise its practical value, and where it works well, it's fantastic. But frankly, some of the chat has been out of step with some of the reality. With the best will in the world, if we are left to our own devices without a framework to support cooperation, then the partnerships which work will be as a result of happy accidents and good relationships. And the work that we do for the public is far too important for that to be the case. So the theme of my speech this morning is strategic cooperation at a time of reform. I'll outline where the National Crime Agency sits within the wider law enforcement reforms and how it's building a partnership which is absolutely essential to how we intend to operate and how we'll cut crime and protect the public. Let me start with some comments on the nature of the threats that we must address. Organised crime and our response to it is now viewed squarely across government within the context of the national security picture, a really important step forward. This is a vital recognition of the scale of its impact. And yet discussions at a recent conference in London underline starkly for me how important it is that our strategic partnerships operate even more broadly than that. Partners from the UK and the US law enforcement and counter-terrorism community met last month to discuss whether and how these two apparently ideologically and profit-driven threats might align. What emerged from our discussions was a pattern of similarities between markets, tactics and impacts. You might call it their ways and our ways. Including terrorist groups drawing on organised crime resources and organised crime groups developing terrorist-style tactics. And whilst there remain good reasons for adopting different approaches to tackling these threats, there was also acknowledgement that better coordination and sharing of resources, including intelligence, could have a significant benefit for our efforts to combat both types of threat. The monetary cost of organised crime alone warrants the priority that government now affords it. But even more compelling, I think, are the arguments around its impact and the way it exploits global instability. It is no surprise that areas with unstable governance are often key points for drug trafficking routes, for example. Fragile states are susceptible to corruption and violence. So-called ungoverned spaces provide opportunities for organised crime to take root and flourish. One part of our strategy to combat organised crime, therefore, might be coordinating the actions of governments and international partners more broadly so that capacity-building efforts align with our aims for tackling organised crime. All this makes it sound as if organised crime is a problem far removed from our own experiences. The inescapable reality, of course, is that the impact of serious organised and complex crime aren't all happening somewhere else to somebody else's life. They're causing direct neighbourhood-level damage for all of us, wherever we live, all of the time. The fact that UK first national strategy on organised crime is called local to global is an explicit recognition of that particular challenge. So is the inclusion of organised crime in the strategic policing requirement. Yes, organised crime can be ingenious and complex and target high-value targets, but it also, inevitably, involves a long chain of corrosive criminality, which may start life thousands of miles away, but which ends up on a street corner or in a home near you. And that's all across the UK. We saw the ugliest face of this on the 18th of September in Mottram. where PC Fiona Bone and PC Nicola Hughes were murdered so horrifically. That act of horrendous violence quickly exposed to wider public view the way that organised crime groups can use fear and intimidation to undermine the cohesion of a community. Instability caused by organised crime is not just happening in fragile states elsewhere in the world. The reality of the contemporary threat in the UK is it's impossible to protect a neighbourhood in isolation. Indeed, in protecting people from local level impacts, no one force or agency can confront the national or transnational threats by itself. It must join up and respond to the nature of the threat. Consider, for example, every gram of Class A drugs, heroin and cocaine, that individuals consume in the UK, that addicts rob for, that dealers fight over, and that gangs seek to control, is grown and processed overseas. We know the closer you can intervene to the source of a problem, the more effective your intervention will be. This is particularly true for law enforcement when it comes to drugs. As you get further from source, the product is split, cut with other substances, and resold. In other words, its footprint multiplies like a virus. The further from source you intervene, the more resources you need. If you wait till the drugs are at your country's border, or inside it, or on the streets of your community, the resources grow exponentially. These threats are local, regional, national, and global, and a response must be too. Whilst local policing, strongly grounded in local communities, is absolutely vital to the overall effort, so is collaboration across force boundaries and across the range of national agencies that we have in place. So how do we make sure that more than 50 police forces and numerous national agencies across the UK complement each other and coordinate their activity in a way which protects the public and cuts crime? Many of the reforms taking place now are working towards that ambition. And one of the biggest changes is in support of a structured approach is the creation of the National Crime Agency. The UK has never before had an agency that has the responsibility to lead the overall law enforcement response to serious, organised and complex crime. Subject to the Crime and Courts Bill, the NCA will be given the authority to provide the leadership for the first time, aligning and directing when necessary the UK's collective response to the most dangerous individuals and criminal groups. The tasking provisions contained within the bill provide a backstop for this arrangement, but our aim should be that they are never used. If we do need to use them, then we will, and I'm also clear that we do need to have the power. It's not only symbolic, but it's important operationally to set a different tone for how we're going to tackle serious, organised and complex crime. That could mean that in some circumstances the Director General of the NCA is able to ask any UK police force or law enforcement agency to undertake a task that helps the collective effort to fight organised crime and to protect the public. In very rare cases where agreement cannot be reached or reached in time on the action needed, it might mean the Director General having the power to direct police forces in England and Wales to carry out specific activities. The backstop must be there. Sometimes it can take more than one force or agency to determine the best overall response. And when that approach has been identified, it is unlikely to suit everyone all the time. But I believe that knowing the tasking option is in our collective armoury should give every force and every agency the confidence that, on occasions, the best collective outcome will bring direct benefits to the people and the communities that those forces and agencies are charged with protecting. Of course, you cannot simply assign leadership. It works and will be sustainable only where partners come with you in a spirit of cooperation and followership. So the leadership the NCA provides will be much more than conferring authority. It will be founded on a strong set of principles and working practices, which we're developing now in consultation with our partners in the police, law enforcement, security and intelligence agencies. From the outset, we've taken a co-creation approach to building the agency, with precursor agencies, with our partners represented at every level of governance, involved in all the decision-making. And yes, we don't always agree about how we're going to do things, but everyone is involved at every level. There's absolutely no question that that approach adds to the complexity of change and the length of time it's going to take. But I would have it no other way. It does seem to me that in trying to describe how we'll work in an operational setting, that type of working starts now in how we build the agency. So we have a collective stake, a collective ambition, and a collective confidence in what we're building. Another NCA first will be to support a tighter network of partnerships, will be a single shared national intelligence picture of serious, organised and complex crime. There are compelling operational reasons for ensuring that law enforcement's understanding of the scale and nature of the threat is consistent. It enables us to collectively prioritise targets, the activity against them, and the resources to tackle them, locally, regionally, at the border, and overseas. It will help determine which operations the NCA leads, which it supports, which it coordinates, and, where necessary, which it tasks. It will identify opportunities across a wider landscape, deconflict multiple sources, and give forces and agencies confidence to make their own interventions and allocate valuable resources appropriately. But on top of those sound operational reasons is the fact that a single intelligence picture reinforces the partnership and the collective effort across the UK. Ideally, every partner involved in a particular intervention supports the rationale behind it. I don't pretend to believe that's going to be possible on every occasion, but I do believe that it is possible a great deal more of the time that when a decision is made, more of us support the decision and it's done in a transparent and collaborative way. And, of course, effective partnership will be crucial to creating that single intelligence picture in the first place. Much of what I've said so far sets out an aspiration, but, of course, the crunch, quite rightly, is when we actually start to deliver together. We now have the first version of an NCA partnership commitment, which has been developed in consultation, again, with the police and other agencies, to ensure that everyone has a sense of exactly how this is going to work, and it's a collective agreement. It will help us make the most effective use of our collective knowledge and skills by spelling out clearly the two-way relationship between the NCA and its partners. The commitment covers how the NCA will work with law enforcement partners to protect the public and cut crime, how we'll work together to determine who is best placed to lead an operational activity, and the range of NCA specialist assets and capabilities that will be available to our partners. I also need to be clear we'll need separate arrangements in Scotland and Northern Ireland because of the nature of devolvement, and those are being developed. As with other key elements of the NCA build, we will continue to refine and develop the partnership commitment as we move forward, and again, it will be done with police and agencies. It is, even at this stage, a detailed technical document, and it's hardly the stuff to close with a rousing speech to encourage all of us to be as energetic and committed as we possibly can be. But let me try and outline for you some of the key principles which have been firmly fixed and which I believe will put us in a strong position to deliver truly strategic cooperation. First, and as you know by now, vitally important to me is that this commitment is developed with our partners. Decisions about whether the agency leads an operational response, supports our partners with specialist resources, brings together partner agencies to coordinate a response, or indeed does all of these at different times in the same operation, will not be determined by thresholds or numbers. It's quite attractive because it's simple, but it doesn't represent the nature of the threat and it doesn't enable us to make the best decisions. Instead, we're developing a number of intuitive tests, again in consultation with our partners, which create a clear framework within which we can make decisions, but they don't squeeze out, importantly for me, operational judgment and common sense. The NCA commitment is therefore that we'll act in line with strategic and operational priorities, including whether the threat is identified within local to global as an organised crime threat. We'll work with partners to address high-impact criminality, where the scale of the criminality is significant in terms of the impact, number or vulnerability of victims. And we'll target nationally significant criminals and their groups where we can contribute to the operational response, including those criminals and groups that have particular overseas links. We'll react when we become aware of an immediate need for urgent action, whether the situation itself is high risk to those involved, to our officers, or to the UK more widely. Where there's a need for urgent action, we will act urgently. We'll consider the relative capacities and capabilities of our partners, including the NCA, because it varies, and there's a recognition there is a need for hard choices. But what we're talking about here is making sure that we get the joined-up response in the right place, and NCA brings its unique contribution operationally, and that will include leading operations against the most dangerous and difficult groups and individuals. The process will link seamlessly into regional multi-agency tasking. Allied to this is ongoing work by the Organised Crime Coordination Centre to make better use of organised crime group mapping across the whole of the law enforcement community, and to make sure that we do it in a consistent way and that the whole methodology has properly penetrated right the way through our organisations. This includes more clearly defining the national, regional and local significance of organised crime groups and criminals. For example, nationally significant groups, at the moment we're defining as those that are most impactive, those that are most criminally capable, so in terms of having the ability to corrupt, infiltrate organisations and access to specialists, and those that impact across a number of regions or internationally. So we're looking at the people who are operating at the high end of organised crime. Again, though, importantly, these definitions will include the flexibility to respond on the basis of good professional judgment and common sense. It is important to acknowledge that the NCA will not have a monopoly on dealing with any particular crime type. Similarly, the national response will demand capabilities well beyond that of the NCA. This is about joining up into a virtual single system of law enforcement. Close and effective partnership with police forces and law enforcement agencies locally, regionally, nationally and internationally must be genuinely two-way and must be the reality. This isn't about making the right noises, it's about the practical reality of cutting crime and protecting the public. None of us could ignore the fact that with finite resources we must all use what we have to better effect and recognise where we can prevent duplication and where we can complement one another, with everything being focused on protecting the public. The changes the NCA will bring are designed to maximise efficiency, streamline our responses through quality intelligence, mutual support and proper operational planning. But crucially, as I said at the top, none of us will achieve our ambitions for change unless we also use the resources collaboratively and increase the breadth and impact of our collective footprint. In creating the NCA, we have a genuine opportunity to turn a worthy ambition into a standard part of how we operate together. And it's all about protecting the public and cutting crime. And that's what the NCA will stand for. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.